I'm probably one of the few speakers here who is neither a student of Andreas nor has written a joint paper with Andreas, but still I think my work has been influenced very much by his work, and I will come back to that. I will come back to that in a minute. Let me first start with several announcements. I need to make a couple of announcements, and I will start with the shortest one and then in increasing length. So the first one is, I just want to announce a conference which will take place in Kobe, where I am, next year in summer. It's the ALC, which means Asian Logic Conference, and this takes place every 3 years in a country of East Asia or Russia, or actually now also Australia and New Zealand form part of this. And it's the 10th AC, and it takes part from September 1 to September 6 in, well, 2008. So that's a general logic conference, but of course there will be also set theory, there will be tutorial and plenary speaker in set theory, and there will also be a special session in set theory. And also I'm right now trying to put together a satellite conference in set theory, which would be before that conference, so in the last week of August. Okay, next I probably should do something which I should have done much earlier. I want to thank Juris for, and the other organizers for inviting me here. Of course, he's the only one of the organizers who is present, I think. And I caused him a little bit of trouble, I think, because what happened was, for a long time I was undecided whether I should attend, because it's quite a far trip, as you probably know, and it's also quite a jet lag, it's a 10-hour time difference. And so when I got this invitation, I simply didn't respond, and I just threw it somewhere, and I only read half of the invitation, and there it said I should send an abstract, like in August, and I didn't read the other half where it said that I should say by end of June whether I wanted to attend, so I didn't do that, so I contacted him only in August saying that I wanted to attend. And at that time the program was already completely full and it wasn't clear whether I could speak, so things got shifted and the final decision was only reached in October. Now, why could I eventually speak? Well, that's a rather sad story. Namely, I'm taking over the original slot of Claude Laflamme, who was supposed to speak this morning, who was supposed to be the first speaker, and he's not able to come, and the reason is he had some knee operation, and he first thought that after that, I mean, this knee operation was quite some time ago, he would recover and could come here, but the operation went badly and he had to have another operation, and I think now he is getting better, but he is unable to come here, and so he asked me to read a few words, mainly, a few words of thanks to Andreas. So I'm now starting to quote, or actually to read what Claude asked me to read. It is with disappointment that I'm unable to attend this conference in honor of Andreas's 60th birthday. I had very much looked forward to it, and had mistakenly thought I had scheduled my knee surgeries perfectly well to allow me to do so. Unfortunately, the surgeon had other plans. It is fair to say that I had seriously thought of quitting mathematics at some point before my doctoral studies. However, I had been reading Andreas's work for a few years now, and my plans to move to Ann Arbor renewed my interest. The day I phoned to accept the invitation, a colleague was trying to convince me this was a dreadful place to be. But I had visited Ann Arbor already over the summer, met Andreas, and it is because of him that I was going no matter what. As first-year graduate students, we learned to teach our own calculus class and ran office hours in the zoo among 150 other grad students. I was warmly welcomed in the logic group with the other students. Andreas taught impeccable logic classes. My notes are the only readable ones I ever took. And he was the utmost patient supervisor. We had a weekly seminar attended by all of us and always many visitors, followed by memorable dinners of resin bagels and good company. I followed Andreas to Penn State 1 year for his sabbatical and the year after Herr Schellach gave us a full year graduate course, part of it in discrete mathematics. I was even married while a grad student, and my oldest daughter was born while writing my thesis. I still don't understand how, as my supervisor, Andreas could have allowed that. The thesis defense was soon celebrated in Peter Hinman's office over champagne. My 4 years in Ann Arbor were truly a fantastic environment for a graduate student. I'm profoundly indebted to Andreas for his guidance and friendship, and wish him a very happy birthday. Big shake hand, Claude Laflamme. Okay, so that's what he asked me to do. Now comes the next thing. Actually, now we start with mathematics. I do not know whether anybody of you has looked at the page of abstracts of this conference before coming here. If somebody has looked, he or she may have realized that there was another abstract before, and that I once changed the abstract, or actually had Uris exchange it. And the reason was that the theorem I wanted to present today, well, I think it is true, and I probably can fix it now, but it's much more technical than I, or it's, there is some additional technical problem which I still need to resolve and which I haven't written up yet. So I rather decided not to do it. But still, I do think that I can prove this result. So let me very quickly mention what it would have been, and then go on to group by stance families. The result would have been the following. It would have been about almost disjoint families, about the almost disjointness number A. So if kappa is a cardinal, let us define A kappa to be the minimal size of an almost disjoint family on kappa, which has size at least cofinality kappa. So maximal almost disjoint family. So A is a family of pairwise almost disjoint subsets of kappa, which means pairwise intersections have size less than kappa, and it's maximal with this property, so it's a maximal almost disjoint family. And there's a further restriction, namely that the size of A is at least cofinality kappa. Of course, it's important to make this restriction because there are mat families of size lambda for every lambda of strictly less than cofinality kappa. That's easy to see. You just take a partition. Modular size less than kappa. So we have A intersecting B less than kappa. Now this is also connected to recent work of Andreas. There's a very interesting recent paper of Blas, Hittin, and Chang. And in this paper they study A kappa for uncountable regular kappa. I should say that for kappa equals omega, of course we put A, this A aleph 0, this column has been studied a lot. But very little is known for uncountable kappa. Now for regular uncountable kappa, they put a very interesting result, which says that if B kappa, the dominating number at kappa, is kappa plus, then A kappa is also kappa plus. So it cannot be any bigger. It's a very interesting result, which involves club guessing, which is a theorem of CFC, and that's why it works. And that's also why it doesn't work for Aleph 0, because there is no club guessing in CFC on Aleph 1. Okay, but that's not the result I wanted to prove. What I want to prove is the following. I want to look at this for singular kappa, in particular for kappa of cofinality omega. Now, one thing is relatively easy to see. If you have, say, kappa is a singular cardinal, and if you have a mat family on CF kappa, then you can just use this mat family on CF kappa to construct a mat family on kappa of the same size. That's a standard construction, I mean. I leave this to everybody as an exercise. But of course, this implies that you always have this inequality here. This is the trivial one. And then, of course, you already see what I want to do, probably. The question is whether this can be consistently strict. And I think I can prove this consistency here, but I still need to work out certain details. Consistency of A aleph, omega less than A. So I should put a small question mark here. Okay. In the proof I have in mind right now, I may have to use a measurable, but I don't think this has any relevance. And the original one was just in VFC, but it broke down at one place. It's actually and now I need a very weird combinatorial principle, which I don't really understand yet. And I think I can force this one from a measurable, or actually trivially force it, whatever. Okay, so that's all I want to say about this. So let me start with Kupreis-Dense families now. And I think it's quite fitting I speak about this topic because, as far as I understand, at least by looking at the literature, this notion was introduced in a joint paper of Andreas and Claude, right? It was a paper which appeared in the JSL in 89, and okay, now I'm speaking on Andreas's birthday, and also I'm taking the slot of Claude, so I think it's a good idea to speak about this. That's not really. Okay, so let me first recall the notions. We have a family D, which is a subfamily of omega to the omega, the countable subsets of omega. And such a family is called groupwise dense if two conditions are satisfied. The first one is that D is open, which is the same, I mean, instead of open, we could say it's downward closed. It means that whenever you have a set in the family, and you have a set which is almost included in it, then it also belongs to the family. So if A is in D, and D is almost contained in A, then B is also in D. The second condition is, well, the sort of the groupwise then condition. It's a condition about partition. So whenever we have a partition of omega into finite intervals, so let's assume Rn is a partition of omega into finite intervals, then there is an infinite subset of omega such that the union, an infinite subset B, such that the union of the In, where N ranges over B, belongs to D. So downward closed says it contains all small sets in a certain sense, given a set it contains all smaller ones. But that one says it also has to contain some a little bit bigger sets. Okay, so this is about a family. So family is groupwise dense if we have this condition. Now, yes, as the notion of a groupwise dense ideal, and that simply means it's an ideal which is groupwise dense. So apart from these two conditions, it's also closed under finite unions. That's the only difference. So this means ideal. And groupwise dense. Then we have the groupwise density number. G. This is the minimal size of a family D of groupwise dense families. So all D in D are grouped by spans, and the intersection over D is FT. So the intersection of all the group by spans families in the family D is MT. And then if you have GF, which is the group by density number for ideals, the F here stands for filters, because of course whenever you have an ideal you can dualize it to filter, and that's why we get the F here. So that's the group by density number for ideals. And it has exactly the same definition, except that here we have group by sense ideal. And the rest is the same. So of course, this is very, very similar, and you may ask whether there's a difference at all. Now, let me just say something or recall something about where these cardinals sit. There is another number which is very important. It's the distributivity number H. That's just the distributivity number of the algebra P omega mod fin. That's very easy to see. This is an uncountable cardinal because P omega mod fin is sigma closed. And also it's very easy to see G is at least H, basically just by the definition. It's also trivial that G is less or equal than GF, because here, here we intersect ideas, so we have a further restriction. So to get the empty set may be harder here than it is there. And finally, it's known this is less or equal than D. That's not trivial, but it's not very difficult. And this is less or equal than C. C is the size of the continuum. So of course under CH everything is trivial, and we are interested in non-CH context now. I think I should say a few words why these cardinals are interesting. Of course there are many reasons. I will only touch this a little bit. They are important for the study of ultrafilters and omega. They're related to what's called NCF, near coherence of filters. I will not touch this subject. For this one, or actually for the notion of a group by spans ideal, of course there's another characterization. If you look at bare category on the real line, then for an ideal to be group by spans is the same thing as being non-meager in the sense of category. So there's a very nice characterization. Basically this follows, this is not directly clear from the definition, it follows from Talleyrand's characterization of meager filters. Usually it's done not with ideals but with a dual notion of filters. There's a notion of a feeble filter, which means a filter whose dual ideal is not grouped by spans by definition, and a classical result of Talleyrand says that a filter is feeble if and only if it is meager. Yeah, oh.
You need only
alpha. Okay, oh, I see. And then it's still meager is equivalent. Okay. Right. Of course, it's not for, I mean, in general, for meager non-meager sets, you have nothing like this, because you can have two non-meager sets which have empty intersection. But here you see that if we are in the ideal case, then you need many to have non-empty intersection. So you actually just need this, right? Okay. There are two other principles which are related to G and GF, and actually to the question I'm going to study. One is called the filter dichotomy, abbreviated by FD. And this means that for every filter F on omega, there exists a function from omega to omega, which is finite to 1, such that either the image of F under F is the cofinite filter, or f of f is an ultra filter. Okay, so that's a sort of strong principle for filters, because it means that filters sort of split into two classes, into two cases, into just these two classes, applying, of course, modulo these finite to one functions. And there's another principle, which is called the semi-filter trichotomy. And this is something very similar, but it's more general. It's for semi-filters, which were just mentioned, actually. So for L families, and semi-filter just means it's closed under supersets, but not necessarily under intersections. So for our families X in omega to the omega, closed under almost supersets, there is a function from omega to omega which is finite to 1, such that, and now this time obviously you have three options, it's called trichotomy. Either f of x is the cofinite filter, or f of x is everything, or f of x is an ultra filter. Okay. Then, with these two notions, one can prove U is less than GF if and only if you have filter dichotomy, and U is less than G if and only if you have semi-filter trichotomy. These are results which are also due to Blas and Laflamme, and I think basically they proved this result first, and I think that one more or less follows from this one by changing the proofs appropriately. I don't even know whether it's really written up anywhere, but it's sort of considered folklore modulo, the lower one, I think. Okay. And, of course, there's a question, and I think that's, again, a question by Andreas Blas. The question is whether these two principles are equivalent. Of course, that one is stronger than this one. Which is clear also, I mean, of course, it follows, I mean, this one is also stronger than that one, but also directly by just looking at them, you see this one is a stronger one. Because if you have a filter, of course, you cannot have this option here, because the image of a filter is, again, a filter. So you must have one of those two. Okay. Now, this question is, as far as I understand, still open, right? Yeah. And, but of course, you see, there would be a very easy way to show they are equivalent by simply showing that these two Carbonoff are the same. This would have solved the problem. So an easier one may think, okay, maybe an easier question is, what is the relationship between these two? Now, unfortunately, they are not equal. So, and that's what I want to talk about today. It's consistent that G is less than GF. But, of course, this does not solve the original question. It does not solve the original question because in my model, I have to add dominating reals. I do not know how to do this without adding dominating reals. If I make B large, the unbounding number is made large, and therefore the ultrafilter number is also large. So my model will satisfy neither of these two statements. Okay, let me quickly say something about the structure of this proof, and the rest of my talk will be a sketch of this proof. we start with a model which has CH and diamond on S21. Hopefully should recall what that means. S21 is a set of all ordinals less than Aleph 2, which have cofinality omega 1. And now we have diamond on, that's of course a stationary subset of Aleph 2, and we have diamond on this stationary set, which means that we have guessing at all the ordinals. So it means that for every subset of Aleph 2, for every S subset of Aleph 2, there is an ordinal of uncountable cofinality in ordinal alpha such that S intersected alpha is equal to S alpha, where S alpha is from this diamond sequence here. I'll start with this, and then I make an, I will say in a minute why I need the diamond. I make a finite support iteration of CCC forcing of length Aleph 2, and along the iteration we will build the witness for G equals Aleph 1. Of course, here I want this to be Aleph 1 and that to be Aleph 2. That's the easiest way to separate them. And so we have to build up the witness for this along the iteration. We cannot take a witness in the ground one and preserve it because these groupwise dense penalties will get bigger and bigger. So we need to build it up along the iteration. And the other thing we'll do is we'll use the diamond to guess witnesses for that one, and we will kill them at limit stages of cofinality omega 1. And of course we have to make sure that all potential witnesses of this will be killed, and therefore we need the diamond so that we are able to guess all potential witnesses which arise in the final model, because the witnesses will only be in the final model. Only an initial segment of the witness will be in a smaller model, and we have to be able to guess all of them. Okay, so let me write this down, what I just said, a little bit more explicitly. We have this finite support iteration P alpha Q alpha, alpha is less than omega 2, and now let me say what we do. At cofinality omega 1, that's the place where we want to destroy something, where we need to use a little bit more complicated forcing. We will use labor forcing with a filter, and we need to choose this filter carefully. I will say a little bit more about this later, but, well, let me say at this point already, this labor forcing with a filter, it's a sigma-centered forcing notion. You don't need to know right now what it is, and later I will say it. If the cofinality of alpha is less or equal than omega 1, then the Q alpha will simply be Hector forcing. This is the standard CCC forcing for adding a dominating real. So we will always add dominating reals. And I hope to explain in a minute why we need that. Then we construct the witnesses. So now I'm looking at this. So this is what comes next. The witness for this to be Aleph 1. We construct the beta less than omega 1, groupwise dense. And they will be constructed in the following way. Look, as I said already, we have this iteration of length omega 2, and we will need to construct them along the iteration. So at stage alpha, a certain part will arise, and what will arise will be called d less or equal alpha beta. That's the beta set here, and the initial segment up to alpha. This will be the same as V beta intersected V alpha, and will be an element of V alpha. And here V alpha, of course, denotes the intermediate extension. So that's the extension up to here. This is the model V alpha. Here we have the final model. That's V omega 2. some requirements. If B is less equal than beta prime, then B beta prime less equal than alpha is contained in B beta less equal than alpha. So there will be a decreasing family, and we have to guarantee the intersection is NP. We will always have that B beta less or equal alpha is open in V alpha. If alpha is limit, I also want that d beta less or equal alpha is, we want that this is just a downward closure of the union alpha prime less than alpha d beta less or equal than alpha prime. So at the limit I do the simplest thing I can do. I just take the union of the previous families. Then, of course, I'm in the limit model. But then this is not downward closed. I have to take the downward closure of this. Of course, if the covariant is omega 1, it will be downward closed. But if the covariant is omega, new reals will arise. So we'll have to take the downward closure. Okay. And then comes the final thing, what do I do in the successor step? That's a little bit more complicated. That's actually a distinction in the cases, but since I don't have too much time, I will abbreviate this a little bit so and not go through all details. So if alpha plus is successor, then essentially, that's not exactly true, but essentially we do the following. We take a partition, I alpha n, and in omega in V alpha, no, in V alpha plus 1, in the new model. So I'm looking now at the model V alpha plus 1. So we are here, alpha, and then now we have V alpha plus 1. In this, we have a partition of omega into finite intervals. Which dominates all partitions of V alpha. Dominating means that for every partition in V alpha, and for almost every n here, I alpha n contains one of the sets of the partition, from V alpha. So this partition increases much faster. So the intervals are much bigger. They grow much faster. That's the point. Now, why can we do that? We can do that because in the steps going from here to there, we added a dominating real. So the dominating real generically gives us this dominating partition. That comes from the dominating real. As I said here, we add the dominating real here. This forcing generically also adds a dominating real. So both actually do, so we are fine. And then, we choose some C alpha in omega to the omega. Well, just say it like this. And we let d beta less or equal than alpha be the a's in v alpha plus 1, such that there is a b which belongs either to d less or equal alpha beta or to the union n in c alpha I alpha n, such that a is almost contained in b. So that simply means I take a downward closure of this union. So I take all the sets which are either contained in the previous guys or which are actually contained in this union. And here, of course, I just take such a partition here. And now it's easy to see that if you make this construction, that all the d beta will be Kupai's dense. Of course, they will be open, because we made them open in every V alpha, and they will be Kupai's dense because of this condition, because at each successor step, we took care of this, essentially. And of course, if we just use dominating partitions, because they dominate the ground model partitions, also we get the Kubrick density property with respect to the ground model partitions. So there's no problem. So all of the guys will be Kubrick dense, but of course we have to guarantee that the intersections are still empty, and that's a little bit more difficult. So what do we have to show? We have to show that for all alpha less than omega 2, we have the following. Whenever we have a set A in omega to the omega, which belongs to the model V alpha, then there exists a beta less than omega 1, such that A is not in V beta. That's what we need to show, obviously. That's just writing out, and I will say now, you will see now why I wrote this out. That's the property plus alpha. Let me write here another property, which is weaker a priori. For all sets in V alpha, there is a beta such that A is not in the lesser equal alpha beta. That will be called star alpha. That's weaker, but also we will have another property. For all A in omega to the omega intersected V alpha, and for all beta less than omega 1, if A is not in the beta less or equal than alpha, then it's also A is not in the less or equal alpha plus 1 beta. And that's called Dagger alpha. Now the first thing I want to claim here is that the conjunction of the two properties at the bottom implies the one at the top. So that's actually how the proof goes. So we have this implication. Why? You see, once we have this, that A is not in D beta less or equal than alpha, then we need to show by induction that for alpha prime bigger than alpha, A is still not in D less or equal alpha prime beta. However, the successor step of this induction is exactly this property. And the limit step is trivial. The limit step is trivial because in the limit step, here I took only the Darmstadt closure. Only in the successor step I added something non-trivial. Sorry? Yeah, there should be, actually. I guess. No, not really. No, no, no. It's more complicated. I did not say the whole truth here. In a sense, you're right. But what I'm doing is I just choose one C alpha, but only I choose it for an initial segment of betas. And depending on the alpha, the initial segment of beta will have different lengths. I omitted this small thing. Okay. So we get this implication here. So we are left with showing those two. Now concerning the second property, the second is the easier one. It's essentially trivial. And I'm not going to show it. Let me simply say this is easy. And why is it easy? Basically because we had the dominating reals, and here we use the dominating partition. I mean, this is an exercise. Everybody can figure this out. And now the main point is to prove this. This will be done by induction on alpha. And it turns out that this is again standard for certain cases. Standard if alpha is limit, and also if alpha is alpha prime plus 1, where the cofinality of alpha prime is at most omega. This is omega. Okay, why is this true? Basically because in the limit stage I mean, the limit space is just a standard argument, a standard finite support iteration argument, unit space, and here I just took the downward closure. And for this case, basically, this describes the case where we add the Heckler Rios. So you should recall that the forcing was, if CF alpha is less equal than omega, then we just add one Heckler Rios. So that's a standard argument in Heckler forcing. It's a rank argument. I mean, it's not trivial. It actually takes a while to write it up, but it's quite easy. So the main point is, to show this for successor of an ordinal of uncountable cofinality. So main point of the whole proof is star alpha plus 1 for alpha such that CF alpha is omega 1. Now what do we do here? Now we come back to this forcing. We use this labor forcing F alpha, and of course I haven't said yet what F alpha is, and now of course we see we have to choose the F alpha exactly so that this has to be true, but of course something else also has to be true, and that's the place where we really have to be careful and where the proof sort of gets tricky. So what should the F alpha satisfy? Now again, I'm going to lie, I mean I'm going to omit many things and say only this very brief because I'm almost out of time. A, if alpha has to diagonalize E beta, I guess I didn't even say what E beta is. So the E beta are the weakness which we want to destroy. You may recall that we have to do two things. We have to destroy the weakness for GF and preserve the weakness for G. So E beta is beta less than omega 1 witness for GF. For GF equals omega 1. And this witness is handed down by our diamond principle. So that's what we get from the diamond. We want to diagonalize it. And diagonalize here means that for all beta, F alpha intersected E beta is non-empty. But B, F alpha does not diagonalize the family which we want to preserve, the witness for G. It does not diagonalize the D less or equal alpha beta. So this means there exists a beta such that F alpha intersected D beta less or alpha is empty. Okay, so what does this mean? Why do I do this? Look, this forcing here is a standard forcing which adds a dominating hilbert and also shoots a pseudo-intersection through the filter. So it diagonalizes this filter. So if we diagonalize this filter and the filter meets all the E beta, we will also diagonalize the E beta, meaning we will shoot a set through which will belong to all of the E beta. So the E beta will not have empty intersection anymore, so the E beta witness will be killed. On the other hand, obviously we do not want to kill this thing, so this generic object should not lie in all of the d beta less equal than alpha. But for this to be true, of course, this intersection has to be empty. But of course, much more has to be true. So this property actually is a lie. I mean, I need to do something much stronger than this. Because not only do we need to take care of this particular generic name, but we need to take care of all possible names. We need to guarantee that there is no name which actually diagonalizes the B less or equal alpha beta. And, now I'm just running out of time, so I cannot prove this anymore, but the point is there is an F alpha. We use star alpha, the induction hypothesis at this point, and then we can prove X alpha, F alpha with required properties exist. And this is the main technical proof here. Namely, and the required properties are those two, this one and the strengthening of that one, where we quantify over all possible names. And now unfortunately I cannot sketch this proof anymore, something I originally wanted to do. Let me only say one thing. What we need to do is, basically, you see, we are here at alpha, and the point now is the cofinality alpha is omega 1, and we construct this filter recursively, and of course this filter will be a filter of size omega 1, it will be generated by omega 1 many sets. We have to construct the generators. At each intermediate step, only countably many generators will be constructed. They will be bounded somewhere. There will still be a dominating real over this. That's where we again use the dominating real. And from the dominating real, we can then construct an element which belongs to E beta for an appropriate partition, and then we take another dominating real, construct again an element, and then we take the union of those two, and the union of those two will be added to the filter. And this will work, and then it can be shown that we still can preserve this property because we took a union of two sets here. And so we at this point, of course, we have to use the property which distinguishes this guy from this guy. The property is this guy is closed on the unions, while that one is not. Okay, thanks. No, I cannot. I do not know how to do it. What I can do is I can lift the proof to arbitrary kappa, kappa plus. So I can make g equals kappa, of course regular, g kappa, and kappa is regular, and plus gf is kappa plus. That's a standard lifting from this kind. You see, here I'm not using countable support iteration, but finite support iteration. This kind of finite support iteration proof has a standard lifting using fragments of Martin's axiom to this situation. But I cannot